probably more modern style of Santur, and here the bridges are no longer movable, presuming that the player must be versatile enough to learn to tune.
Totally different hammers,
and physical arrangement of the instrument, and probably, I would assume, from a different locale, or a, you know, update of tradition.
Is it about normally tuned an octave across the bridge instead of fifth?
The first one we looked at was tuned in octaves, essentially. It's moved a little bit from there, but some of them are tuned in fifths. This, by golly. Oh, this is a Turkish kanun, which there are different versions of this. This is a very dulcimer-like version. Some of them are made with a skin head, like a banjo, which just goes down parts of the top of the instrument, and the skin is made from a snake, a large snake.
But that's a psaltery?
Kanun.
Yeah, but then it would be plucked kanun?
Yeah. Well, plucked can be dulcimer.
Yeah, okay.
Pardon me? Can't hear you?
The name of that instrument?
Kanun. It's a Turkish relative of the dulcimer. This is a Ukrainian version of the instrument, and in that part of the world it's called a cymbali, similar to the Jewish cymbal, and they're similar. This one, you can see the elaborate inlays, and yet the arrangement of bridges is just like our American ones, a fifth interval across the bridge. And the hammers are very interesting. The hole for the fingers and the knob on the end. And the hammers in that part of the world can practically identify what city the instrument comes from. Parts of Hungary and Romania and the Ukraine, each city, their makers would have different styles of hammers, and it's really interesting to see the museum collections.
What's the status of the manufacture of these now, like, let's say, in these countries, as compared with the U.S., or are there any large places, or is it mostly individual
makers?
Shop and makers?
In other parts of the world, especially in Eastern Europe, in the countries where these are found, these are generally very, very popular, and they're made right up to date. Here's another cymbali, which is a similar layout. Notice the little hole for the hammers. But we can get right up to the minute. Here's the modern version, with a slick sunburst lacquer finish, just as though it came right out of the Gibson guitar factory. And yet the tuning and the arrangement is the same. So they're still being produced for the public, just in a more palatable form, you know, a nice, slick, colorful finish. And in fact, I've seen some of the ones used in the polka bands with on a raised pedestal with a plastic sparkle front, like a, you know, music stand for Lawrence Welk.
Is this a cymbali or a dulcimer?
This is a cymbali. This is Ukrainian dulcimer.
They don't have any with flames on the sides, do they?
Oh, I hope so. I would certainly.
It's coming. How many strings?
This, I believe, had six strings per course of very light gauge wire. It was a very strident, loud sounding instrument. Oh yeah, well, tapped on them, certainly. You know, I at least walked around and would knock out Soldier's Joy or something. No matter what the tuning, you can always get Soldier's Joy.
Same quality sound as what we have here?
Well, it's a different sort of sound. They're very harsh, strident, loud kind of tone, which you certainly wouldn't want to accompany a voice with, or maybe use as a solo instrument. However, in the setting of a band, you know, with accordion, clarinet, and bass and piano, you can hardly tell the tone of an instrument anyway, but you needed something to come right through with the dance rhythm and the lead instrument, and by golly, it does it. So there are different purposes for different styles of construction of the dulcimer, and maybe that's one of the reasons that there's been no standard for what a dulcimer tone or construction should be like, as there almost is for, say, violins and cellos and pianos. Now here is a another cymbale, but one of a more sophisticated nature. This has a damper pedal and a chromatic tuning, and you can see lots of oddly placed little bridges. And in fact, the instrument no longer has sound holes even, but the what look like sound holes are really nothing more than a decorative inlay of wood mosaic. Now, the dulcimer is popular in China as well. It's a fairly recent instrument there, somewhere between, oh, maybe 200 and 250 years. So, although many people reacted to the dulcimer by saying, hey, that sounds Chinese, well, in fact, it's much more an American instrument than Chinese. It's relatively recent there, certainly compared to Chinese history, and in fact, their name for the dulcimer, Yang Qin, means almost literally foreign instrument. But they've evolved it rather highly, and this was Chinese Orchestra of Lansing, Michigan. And lots of little plucked instruments and flutes and so on surrounding the centerpiece, the Yan Chin. This is the whole crew on stage. And here is a look at a more ornate somewhat older Yang Chin. The instrument looks similar in other parts of the Orient, Thailand and Indochina, where the name for it is literally butterfly harp. And you can see why when they start putting a scalloped shape to it. Notice also the little drawer right in the center of the frame. You pull that out, and of course, that's where your hammers are.
Very elegant.
Here is, we're moving up to the cymbalum. This is about 1875, just about when the folk cymbalum was evolved from an instrument that's pretty much like our dulcimer, with pretty much our sort of fifth interval tuning, to a large four-octave chromatic instrument, which takes about 20 years to master. You can tell that it's pre-electricity because of the candelabra for the music stand. But notice also the lyre underneath. There's a single foot pedal which operates a damper mechanism. One of the problems of the dulcimer is that note once struck will sustain a long time, and the lower the pitch of the note, the longer it will sustain. So once you get to a large instrument with more and more bass notes, the sustain becomes a real problem, and so the invention of damper mechanisms is inevitable because it's very, very necessary. Here are several more cymbalums. Notice that there just seem to be bridges scattered everywhere. The tuning system is such that any scale played on the instrument requires learning a different pattern for about, four or five different areas of the instrument, so it's very difficult to master. master. But once mastered, you can play in any key or any sort of progression with equal ease, or almost equal ease. The key of B is not the best, but manageable. And there are fancy versions with pretty veneered woods and so on, but inevitably it's the simple black instrument that's the musician's instrument, and this was the best sounding one. Notice the bars over the strings toward the left and right sides carry felt pads underneath, and those are the dampers which dampen the notes when played. With the dampers in place, you can still get an audible sound, but it's cut off like a marimba, and then the foot pedal raises the dampers off the strings to get a sustaining effect. Lots of strings. And here's one in use. This is Gusty Horvath and his Gypsy Orchestra. And this was wonderful. He could play without even looking at the string, so he was sort of, keeping an eye on the audience while leading the band, which consisted of jazz guitar, two gypsy violins, bass, two dancing girls with tambourines, who were the chick vocalists, and the most wonderful musical saw player I ever heard. He was better by far than the violinists, and they were good.
Is this the group that's in Detroit?
They're in
Windsor,
Ontario.
Yeah.
Right.
I like the sunglasses.
Yeah, and if we have time for it, which we may not, probably not. Yeah, I do have tapes of music on most of these kinds of instruments. It would have been nice to play them at the same time that we're looking at them, but you'll have to take my word for what they sound like. Here's a modern player, not so much, Paul Van Arsdale, who's a third generation player. Who has just moved to a chromatic instrument himself. Notice that our modern American instruments tend not to follow the Eastern European trend, which is big, large, not very portable thing, but they needed a loud instrument that could be played without sound systems. Here in America, we played to smaller audiences, or today we have microphones, and that has changed the whole nature of the evolution of the dulcimer, and in fact, we're going back to non-parlor, but a portable style of instrument like this is, which he can set on a tray stand and play anywhere he goes, which most of us try to do. And also hammers have evolved. Here's a collection of mostly traditional style hammers from the United States, and notice that every one of them has a slender shaft and a big knobby sort of head, or a very springy shaft. It gives a very nice tone, but I found about 15 years ago or so that a very rigid shafted hammer allowed you to do very controlled bounces and rhythmic effects as a percussionist or drummer would do, and now almost everyone is playing with a rigid hammer because of those percussion effects, and those of you in Bob Shank's class have probably heard some of what can be done, and the rest of us will hear it on Thursday night's concert. Bob, who's been a percussionist, can bring much of that technique to the dulcimer when the hammer doesn't flex, and he can very accurately control the rhythmic effects of the hammer. Here are example of a more modern rigid shaft hammer. Some more of them. And let's see. I can just dash through a few more slides without really paying much attention to somewhere of what I'm going to get here. I'll just, we'll shoot for some serendipity and see what's in the middle of this tray. More stiff-shafted hammers. Wonderful. Just when we were talking about.
Just where we left off.
Just where we left off. Portable stands, which gone one step further thanks to Malcolm Dalglish, who, as far as I know, invented the monopod stand, just one stick of wood to hold up the instrument and rest it on your knees. So we're going back to a very portable sort of instrument. It's almost it's a real sort of folk tradition, because if it were a parlor instrument, we would think of that as more of a formal sort of thing, as opposed to the portable instruments that can go anywhere and play in rural areas. Modern fancy instrument. Let me see what we have here. Oh, this is what I wanted to get to. Rather than evolving toward the cembalo, when we want to play the low parts, we'll have a bass dulcimer. And here is a modern bass dulcimer with a chromatic tuning and a damper arrangement and a stand which collapses with, you know, it has mortise and tenons that come apart and a big foot pedal, which controls the dampers. And I think we've got some close-ups of that.
Is that one of yours, sir?
Yeah. You can see the, in order to make it portable, you don't want to lug a big foot lyre around as the piano or cymbalum has, so we've got a wire, a string that goes underneath the instrument. And the people using this play, it's a duet, a husband and wife who play soprano and bass dulcimers, and they're doing some beautiful things with it, and it's nice to know that there's someone out there in the world who's an accomplished chromatic bass dulcimer player that we can, you know, call on for recording sessions and so on. And this is a look at the inside, which shows the little lever action, which pushes up the damper levers. So those of you who build dulcimers, you know, should you want to build a bass or try this on your standard dulcimer, I'd love to have more people trying out dulcimers with a damper pedal. It's like an entirely different instrument because you can use it in very different ways. It's a lot of fun. And with our American dulcimers, unlike the cymbalum, which has a very complicated tuning, we wanted to retain the simple older tuning and yet add in notes that are otherwise missing so that we can play a full chromatic scale, play any kind of music or almost any kind of music, and yet not have to relearn the instrument. Still have our simple to play diatonic scales. And I've been experimenting with that a long time. And here are all some different arrangements of that where we have three playing bridges instead of two. Let's see if we have a bunch more. It's an unusual need that we have from the cymbalum. We want to be able to play the old folk tunes on the dulcimer. Well, we want a portable instrument. And we also want to play more complex things than folk tunes. So from the parlor instruments of colonial days, the demands, you know, with the use of sound systems and so on, and pianos taking the place as a parlor instrument, the dulcimer has become smaller, more portable, and we've tried to devise ways to preserve our simple folk tuning and yet add in other things to increase the capability to play any kind of music. People coming from all over the world to get our American dulcimers. This is just a brief romp through what you'll be seeing as dulcimers with little bridges in strange places with experiments for adding in the extra necessary notes, and so on. And that's the end of Dulcimer's, I think. We just have a few other Rosetta instruments, is what we have. Darth Vader has nothing on the modern instrument maker. Captured in his lair. Okay. That's probably long enough, right, Leo?
Sure, that's great.
Okay.
Thanks very much to Sam.
Well, I think we can get into that
discussion
almost immediately with Leo.
Half
but that raises the question in regard to the hammer dulcimer, and you hear a lot of assumptions that it's so many thousands and thousands of years old. Well, we think maybe that's true because of examples carved in stone on buildings and so on. But as far as definite written or verifiable records, we know that by 9th century in Persia, it was highly developed. And the 9th century Persian santurs look almost identical to the simple santurs that I showed on slides, which aren't all that different from our modern dulcimers. So by 9th century Persia, it was highly evolved, and there were players who were highly renowned for being able to move an audience to laughter or tears or any kind of emotion with the quality of their performance. Now, the fretted dulcimer goes back probably a long way, but in other types of instruments that are not so clearly related to our American fretted dulcimer, and I'm sure Leo and Mike have a lot more to say on that.
Other questions about the hammer dulcimer here for Sam?
Yeah,
and for Nick as
well.
Can we bring up the house lights for? Why don't we just have a couple questions? Then we'll maybe take a very short break, switch over the things, have a little bit of talk on the relationship of the names of the two very different instruments.
What did you learn to do? How did you get involved in this?
The dulcimer was the most magical thing I ever heard. I loved string instruments since I was a child. When at about 3 years old, I sat at the knee of my uncle who played banjo, fiddle, and guitar.
Yeah,
and
right.
So I started building my own instruments as soon as I could carve awful little things out of wood. And people either immediately love or hate the hammer dulcimer. It seems like there's no in between, but it's a very magical, angelic sort of thing. One of the great harp virtuosos of the world, concert harpist, told me that he considered the dulcimer the more angelic of instruments.
Wow.
So from there it was just, there was no Augusta when I wanted to learn, so either to build or to play, so I had to struggle through about 20 years of doing it the hard way, and now people come here and in a week learn more than I did in 5 years.
Thanks to your initial 20 years.
Yeah.
Other questions? Why don't we take a really short break just so you have a chance to stretch before another set of slides, and say about really 5 minutes. We'll come back and is the very interesting coincidence of the name dulcimer and the fact that dulcimer has been applied to the, I hesitate to say hammered now because it was also plucked, but the larger instrument with lots of strings over bridges, and what is all certainly the older instrument, and the fact that it's also applied to, you know, now we have to make these qualifying terms, hammer dulcimer or fretted dulcimer. Of course, I know of at least four synonyms for that. You have the fretted dulcimer or the lap dulcimer or the Appalachian dulcimer and the mountain dulcimer, right? So all of those terms used as a qualifier, and I think each of our scholars here have some thoughts perhaps on the etymology of that. Nick, did you We're supposing some things about the how it is that we have two very different instruments by the same name.
Well, it's the word dulcimer comes from dulce mellos. There doesn't seem to be any trouble with that. Latin for sweet sounds, and it and it's used and it's found very, very early, but it's applied only to the hammered variety. And then the mix up seems to come in the early 1900s. If you look in Sears and Roebuck catalogs, they call the hammered dulcimer a dulcimer. They don't make any bones about what it is. And even in Jesse Martin's newspaper ads in the 1920s, the famous dulcimer player, this is pretty well set. But there is a as to when it gets transferred over, I think that's a question of the fretted dulcimer revival and the terminology that was used in the Appalachians and why they were calling them dulcimers there, whether it was because of the biblical reference and maybe you just called any musical instrument that sounded good a dulcimer because of the biblical reference, or
it seems
you've
that
got
the,
some ideas too.
That the non-English, that the English-speaking immigrants that wanted to play the instrument chose names other than the other immigrants used who brought those kinds of instruments here. And dulcimer wasn't the only one name chosen. And
right.
There are regional names for that kind of instrument.
Well, there's even the variation on the name dulcimer, dulcimer, and various spellings.
Well, that goes back to Old English, too. And, medieval times, and you can find those uses and corruptions. Dulcimers being a corruption of
dulcimello.
Spelling is not one of those things that comes until fairly late. So,
right.
Yeah, things are spelled all sorts of different ways.
Right.
Yeah,
so it's
right.
It's been called, in some localities, no one had heard the name dulcimer. It would be a hog fiddle or. I can't remember. You probably know more of those.
There's even a reference to it as something like harmonica.
Yeah.
Harmonium.
Or harmonium.
Right. Scantlin. Scantlin, yeah. Actually called an Irish lyre by some people, evidently.
And the interesting thing is in Ireland or England or Scotland, and it's mostly those groups who are, as immigrants, who are calling it dulcimer. None of those countries had a fretted instrument of any sort.
Yeah, as you'll see in some of the slides that Mike and I are going to show you, the fretted zithers that were brought over to this country were such things as the German Scheitholt. There seems to be the strongest evidence for that type of instrument having been brought over, and we've got some pictures of some of those. And It's interesting that although the descendants of English, Irish, Scottish settlers became the players of these fretted zithers, which became called dulcimers, as Sam mentioned, the people, the original settlers themselves, did not have fretted zithers in their countries. So they adopted this instrument, which had other sorts of European roots, and one can't help but wonder if there's a certain amount of just, I don't know if you call it chauvinism or whatever, in not wanting to call their newly adopted instrument by a name like Scheitholt, which they identified with with the German settlers who lived in another portion of the valley or something like that. Played a different kind of music. What we're not quite sure either. There's a portion of this next set of slides which we have a soundtrack for, and a portion which we don't have a soundtrack for, mainly because there's some of these early instruments in the Pennsylvania Dutch Scheitholts or zitters or straight-sided zithers, whatever you like to call them. We're really not too sure at all what kind of music was played on them, and precious little is known about that. I have come to the dulcimer revival. I guess I've been playing about 9 years and traveling around a lot in the past 5 in particular, and after traveling around for a couple years, it occurred to me that I was seeing an awful lot of interesting instruments, and that I was kind of in an opportunity giving workshops to groups of dulcimer players to see quite a variety of mountain dulcimers in particular, and decided that I'd like to start photographing some of them. So the first part and the last part of the slideshow represents just pictures that I've collected, mostly of more modern instruments, although I've encountered some older instruments, some in collections and some in museums. And my interests coincide with Mike's on that score. Mike has been working on a master's degree in folklore down at Chapel Hill. And after some introductory slides and soundtrack, I'm going to turn part of this over to Mike, who will talk about the revival, which has been occurring and which we're really all a part of now, especially, but which has roots going back many, many years. Doug, why don't you hit the lights here? I wanted to start off, you saw... here. Let's see if we're in focus. We've, having heard now a lot about these hammered dulcimers, Sam was talking about the more stiffly shafted hammers, and that's the maker on the left there. He looks a little bit doubtful about...
They do bounce real well.
They bounce very well.